Good morning. You know, sometimes I've seen speakers come up with a device, whatever it is, and I thought, well, no, I like paper. And this morning my printer didn't work, so I'm up here with my iPad. I'll try this. I'm taking a break from the cottage to be here this morning. Karen and Jen are still up at Red Bay, and I'm going to head back up later on today. We've been swimming, taking walks along the beach, watching sunsets. Jen and I were out watching a sunset the other day and noticed a whole bunch of little fish gathering around our feet, and then I realized what was going on. It was a minnow night. Sorry. So when I found out that I was preaching on sloth, I thought, what better time? The cottage, right? And I also thought, well, boy, this is a great topic. I don't have to put too much work into this. I talked to my friend Rick, and Rick said, you know, I'm going to be there for that one. I said, no, maybe I'll stay in bed. So it's good to see you, Rick. Seriously, I've been enjoying our series on the seven deadly sins. The series has helped me think a bit more critically about what we consider to be sinful behavior. But I've also been wondering, why are these sins considered to be deadly? I mean, why is sloth considered deadly? After all, they don't move very fast, and they're kind of cute. Like, and if you haven't seen Zootopia, you gotta watch this clip. Anyway, and finally, there you go. Thanks, Barry. Sloths are named after their slow movements, but this is really a misunderstanding of the definition and history of the term. Sloth and its corresponding virtue, joy, are often both misunderstood. Sloth. Boy, I was so impressed with your, what phrase did you use in your prayer? Sloth, and you had several S's in a row. I was so impressed. I'm going to try to do the same. There we go. Yeah, the sway of sloth. Sloth and its corresponding value, joy, are both often misunderstood. Sloth is not simply slowness or laziness, and this is really good news for my afternoon naps. Neither is joy simply an overwhelming sense of being happy. Both joy and sloth deserve more attention and careful consideration. And really, being slow isn't necessarily a bad thing. Sloths have adapted to a slow lifestyle in part to avoid detection by predators, and their slow speed allows algae to grow on their coats, which feeds sloth moths. There you go, there's a phrase, sloth moths. Who knew? For humans, while an apparent state of inactivity may at times reflect depression or despair, it may also reflect virtue. I find that one of the most difficult things for my students to do when they do an internship at L'Arche is to slow down, to be present to core members and to each other. And I can relate because I entered L'Arche off of a manual labor job. I was chipping paint on a fuel ship, and I came into L'Arche and I said, what do I do? And I said, well, you can sit with Maggie and do a crossword puzzle. And I said, well, no, what do I do? What do I do? And, you can sit with Brian and listen to some music. And I said, what do I do? And they said, well, you can fix the toilet, and then you can sit with Brian and listen to music. So slowness, being still, can be a virtue. There is the slow food movement. I'm reminded of Psalm 46, verse 10, be still and know that I am God. Now, on the other hand, being industrious has its pitfalls. It's been proclaimed as a virtue in and of itself, the Protestant work ethic, early to bed, early to rise. But we may be busy doing things simply for the sake of doing things. We may behave like zombies, consigning ourselves to the hectic pace of everyday life. And in this way, our busy lives may actually lead to the indifference and passivity of sloth. According to an article from The Guardian based on a palliative care study, the second most common regret expressed on a deathbed is, I shouldn't have worked so hard. According to Bronnie Ware, an Australian nurse who conducted the study, this came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence and not with family. So then what is sloth? And what about joy? By the time that Pope Gregory made up this list of the seven deadly sins in the 6th century, sloth was a combination of two elements. And this is from the Latin, so I'm probably going to mispronounce them. Acedia, which is a lack of caring, an indifference towards God and each other. According to Dennis Ockholm, whose book I used, Dangerous Passions, Deadly Sins, Learning from the Psychology of Ancient Monks, he says that ancient monks refer to Asadia as the noonday demon. I'm just going to read a passage from this book for you here. Okay. The noonday demon, right? It begins its attack on the solitary monk around the fourth hour, about 10 o'clock in the morning, keeps it up until the monk finally gets to eat his single meal of the day at the hour of noon, the ninth hour, or 3 p.m. From morning to afternoon, the day grinds on. The monk keeps poking his head out of his cell to check the sun's position. He grows restless, hates his place, despises his life, and tires of manual labor. He mopes, convinced that no one cares. The grass looks greener elsewhere, where perhaps he could procure life's necessities more easily, make a success of himself. So even the monks suffered from asadia. The second part of sloth is tristitia, sadness or sorrow. And together, these manifest in a decisive turning away from love. Being slothful is being slow to love, expressed through inaction. And I would argue particularly on behalf of those who are marginalized. God's disdain for indifference is repeated over and over again in the Bible. Choose this day whom you will serve. You cannot serve God and mammon. I wish you were either hot or cold. The parable of the talents. God does not like indifference. God wants us to love, to be active in our loving. Sloth is epitomized by Pilate washing his hands of Jesus' fate. And as I was preparing for this, I thought of a contemporary example. I thought of the current president washing his hands of mass shootings by blaming them on mental illness and social media. The meaning of sloth apparently changed in relation to the Industrial Revolution. And being a sociologist, an early sociologist, Max Weber, wrote about Calvinists who were trying to, you know, be assured of their calling and their position in the afterlife. And hard work meant the fruitful harvest, which is a sign of God's favor. Weber said that the God element was left out in the Industrial Revolution. And so hard work and the profit became an equation. So moving from this hard work, the harvest showing God's favor to those who were working hard, it simply became an equation of hard work and profit. Leaving us with early to bed and early to rise. Today, sloth is sometimes likened to depression, but let's go beyond psychological reductionism. Sloth has been likened to alienation, or anomie, where we feel rootless, we have no sure foundation. Dr. Robin Myers, who wrote a book that, apparently Archbishop Desmond Tutu liked, and you might like as well, The Virtue in the Vice, Finding Seven Lively Virtues in the Seven Deadly Sins. And he says, sloth is not about deciding one morning that you will roll over and go back to sleep, or taking a nap in the afternoon when you should be painting the fence. Sloth is about a fundamental loss of faith in one's ability to do anything about anything. It is to live in a prison of apathy, rationalized through cynicism, where the favorite expressions are, so what? And I couldn't care less. My sources refer to sloth as the most religious or theological of the seven deadly sins. We can reduce the others to vices, but this is a turning away from love. And if we believe that God is love, it's a turning away from God. It's a turning away from loving ourselves and others and God. This is the deadly nature of sloth. For some people, despair occurs at key points in one's life, along with loss, grief, and sometimes a midlife crisis, and we're faced with choices. I mean, there's lots of things that are going around on the world around us, too. Governments showing no regard for the marginalized, including victims of mass shootings, global warming, race and gender-based violence. And we're faced with choices. Do we become a nihilist? Do we somehow find hope? Ecclesiastes is the one book of the Bible that, at first glance, appears to toss everything away. Everything's meaningless, and this is repeated 35 times over in the book. But the authors of Ecclesiastes are not really telling us that our lives are meaningless. They're pointing to our drive for profit, for self-fulfillment, for accumulation and fame that are in the end empty pursuits. We're not in control of our destinies so much as God is in control. Then the analogies to nature point to the endless cycle of the seasons, to the rhythms of the earth. And these rhythms may be disrupted today by global warming, The authors point out later in the book that true satisfaction comes from adjusting ourselves to those rhythms, recognizing our human limitations and acting within them. One of my sources substitutes the word absurd. Everything is absurd. Our quest for self-fulfillment is absurd. But this is kind of a reality check. It's not a meaningless book. Our goals reflect our attempts to exercise control over our lives, accumulation and profit. And despair in our lives often reflects a lack of control over those things. The purpose of the book is meaning, to tear down false meaning in search of truth, creating clarity and gratification in a confusing world. Which brings us to joy, the virtue. Where does joy fit in? Joy in life is experienced when we accept our limitations and bring ourselves into alignment with creation. So this is the antithesis of sloth. It's active in the sense that we realize that God is ultimately in control, but within our bounds, within our limitations, we are active and loving. When I was a kid, we sang songs like Joy, Joy, Joy Down in My Heart, and I wondered how anyone could be happy all the time. It reminds me of the song by R.E.M., Shiny Happy People. There's images of people with a perpetual smile, which would be really weird and even cruel in a world where many people suffer. The opposing virtue of joy is actually the performance of religious duty. It's hard to be joyful all the time, and works don't necessarily lead to joy. Going back to Dr. Robin Myers, he suggests instead maybe we substitute the word contentment. Realizing that we're not in control of everything, that death will claim us all, and that true joy comes from letting go, realizing our limitations and working within them for the kingdom of God. And he says, contentment is not just a peaceful, easy feeling or a way to rationalize laziness. It's a deep, easy-breathing wisdom that knows what can and can't be changed, and more important, knows when to do and when to wait. The contented person watches the world closely, but does not stare it down. She enjoys things, rather than trying to possess them or straighten them out. So to be content means a couple of things. It means recognizing that you are a child of God, and so is everyone else. We are infinitely precious. Everyone that we know and love is also subject to sin and temptation. And death will claim us, but God's promise and Jesus' resurrection demonstrates a power greater than death. We can be confident in this. We can claim this, and we can have this as our foundation of our actions and the source of our joy. Myers continues, none of us should carry the burden of trying to save the world. It's not ours to save. If we ever think that we can do enough good works to earn our way into heaven, we fall short of paradise, exhausted and full of despair. The purpose and end of human existence is captured in the shorter Westminster Catechism, to love God and enjoy him forever. So if sloth is indifference, and joy is this deep contentment that we know that God is in control, I ask myself, what is the path from sloth to joy? And this is kind of a personal question as well, because I find that my times of despair are times when I think I haven't succeeded in providing for my family the way I think I should, or you know, getting this or that, or you know, the house, you know, things that I try to own, that I try to control, and then I get worried about these things, and this becomes my source of despair. I'm reminded of the prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr that's referred to as the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And none of this is to belittle despair. Many people suffer from depression, from anxiety, from psychiatric illnesses, psychological conditions, and we need outside help, we need professional help. But this is also a spiritual path, a spiritual path from depression to the joy of knowing that God cares for us, and that God has overcome death, that the love wins in the end. I was thinking about all this when I was at a garden concert up at the cottage, and there's this band playing songs in the 70s and 80s, and I think God has a sense of humor. So all of a sudden I was thinking, well, what's the path from despair to joy? And the band started to play, Lord, Won't You Buy Me a Mercedes-Benz? And I was like, okay, what up with Joe? And then the band started to play Give Me the Beat Boys to Free My Soul. I thought, oh, okay, from there to there. Music is often my medium for being refreshed, for feeling whole again, for recognizing everybody in the audience as listening to and engaging in the music. It's kind of a leveler for me. But there are other paths to joy. To go back to our source of love and creation, to recognize that we are beloved, created beings, and so is everyone around us. I think the path from despair to joy is returning to that source, returning to that love and being empowered by that love. Our trip to Saskatchewan this summer was also a reminder that God takes care of all of us. Karen and Jen were willing to travel 4 days each way to see my mom and dad and give them hugs, and I give thanks for that. These things re-energize me, propel me to express my love through my actions. So, our suffering matters. It isn't easily overcome or ironed out, and the book of Ecclesiastes is a real wrestling with our suffering. Sometimes the way to joy is through our suffering, not to negate the horrors people face every day, or our role in helping each other. The road to Emmaus was through the cross, realizing that God is with us through our sufferings, that joy comes from knowing this, and from knowing our mission on earth, do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with our God.